And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where just like what will likely happen to Ryan Lochte's future swimming career, all Lakers fans have left to look forward to for the rest of this month is Nick Young's respective breaststroke of shame off of the Lakers team as he swims his way all the way to the CBA, where he'll effectively be swapping places with E. Jianlian. So, Alan, how you doing, and what is up with you?
I can tell you that I'm not getting hammered and vandalizing gas stations like Ryan Lochte. That is something I'm not doing. You know, I have a newfound appreciation for synchronized swimming.
Okay.
I gotta say, I've been watching the Olympics like crazy, and it's impressive how these human beings can tread water for like 10 minutes straight and do like acrobatic things in the water. It's pretty impressive.
Do you have a newfound respect for Nick Young's breaststroke all the way to China as he starts his new career as a Chinese basketball player aside Stephon Marbury?
If he eats petroleum jelly the way Stephon Marbury does, and he gets out of here, yeah, I will really appreciate that.
You know, hopefully he'll be able to make up with that one dolphin that he punched, and he can maybe just ride that dolphin all the way to China, and that's what we're hoping for.
That was interview gold, I will say. That was some weird stuff right there.
I think that's the highlight of Nick Young's like career as a Laker, pretty much.
I'll never forget that.
It's him sound punching a dolphin.
I punched a dolphin one time, man.
As you've probably already noticed, it's still summertime.
Off the rails. In 2 minutes.
As usual. But we're going to have a show somehow here. And before we get started, as usual, please rate and review us on iTunes. Because the more you rate and review us, that's how many toe rings Mozgov will have to wear on his left middle toe this season for some reason. Just because 50 games in, when he's riding the pine with a foot injury and his foot is exposed, we're going to need something interesting to distract us, and toe rings is it. So, Alan, besides Timofey Mozgov, who do you think on the Lakers team
could rock a toe ring?
Would probably rock, secretly rock a toe ring.
Nick Young.
He's not going to be on the Lakers team,
Nick
though.
Okay. You know what? God, unfortunately, I think Jordan Clarkson would.
Yeah, I can see that.
Very unfortunate that that's the first thing that comes to mind, but dude, he'd somehow find a way to think he's pulling it off.
He's eccentric.
He's super confident. I mean, it's funny because his game is similar in ways to Westbrook.
I thought it was similar in ways to a dude who wears a toe ring.
I feel like Westbrook would wear a toe ring. He would try to rock that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, Jordan Clarkson.
I can see that. Oh, so yeah, obviously, if you want to see Mozgov rock, like...
Was that a question from one of our listeners in the mailbag?
Who would
wear a toe ring?
No, I made that up because I'm stupid.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, if you want to see Mozgov wear like 15 rings on his left middle toe, obviously rate and review us. And thanks to those who have been doing that, we've gotten some great reviews. And today, we're going to ask the great Larry Nance to read our review for us. So, Larry, what's going on?
Hey guys, how's it going? I hope you're all having a great summer. I know I'm having a lot of fun just hanging out with my buddies and my girlfriend and working out with the guys. It's been a great summer, I must say. So this one is entitled Papa Dang, Papa Dang, Papa Dang. That's a great name, Google Poodle. It says, Fave Lakers Pod. Good for Lakers news, good for lulls, love lulls, good for dumb impressions, keep on keeping on, much love, booyakasha, get it, what, peace sign, fist bump, thumbs up, okay, emojis.
Nice. Thank you, Larry Nance. Apparently, Alan, your voice is just Larry Nance. I guess I've had Larry Nance on the entire time. It's pretty good.
As I'm doing this, I'm like, oh, I just kind of sound like myself.
So what goes into your voice, construction of Larry Nance? Do you just draw out words and articulate a little more?
Yeah, I articulate and enunciate a lot. I watched a few videos of him, and I noticed his upper right lip kind of goes up when he talks. He also lifts his eyebrows a lot, so his eyes get a little bit bigger.
Okay.
His inflection definitely rises towards the ends of certain phrases.
Gotcha.
So there
that
it is.
That is some deep analytics into analyzing how to do this guy's impression. But that's great. All right, with that said, we're going to get on with the show. Today we're going to be talking about D'Angelo Russell, but this time not as controversial, but I guess in terms of basketball sense, kind of. We're going to be talking about, is D'Angelo a scoring point guard or a scoring dude who can pass? Is he a combo guard? What is he? What do we label him? It's confusing. He's 6'5", but he can score a lot. He can also pass here and there. Is he a traditional point guard? What is D'Angelo Russell, and how do we label him moving forward? And do we even have to label him? So we'll get into all that after the turn.
I said it yesterday. We love him. I mean, he got dunked on Everybody does. You know, that's Jeremy's a terrific athlete, but I told him when he got dunked, and I said, I'll get him back for you, and I did. So, I mean, hey, that's my center. I got his back. And
all right, today's topic of discussion centers around D'Angelo's position as a guard in the NBA. As far as we know and as far as we've seen, he's played the point guard spot and he's played the shooting guard spot. In college, when he was in Ohio State, I believe he actually played off-ball a lot, and Shannon Scott was his point guard, but at the same time, he still averaged 6 assists, 5 assists, you know? So a lot of people want to know and want to ask, what do we think D'Angelo is? Is he, even though he plays the point guard, is he a traditional point guard who initiates the offense with his passing, or is he a scoring guard who can pass occasionally? I guess if I could be the first one to give my opinion, I would say that I really don't care what position he plays. I really don't care what we label him as. If at the end of the day he spends his entire NBA career playing the two spot, I would imagine that he's a great two guard. You know, I don't know who would play the one, but I think when it comes to D'Angelo Russell, I think people get too caught up in the semantics of what a point guard, what a shooting guard is in today's NBA, when the game has evolved and changed so dramatically that we're moving into an era of positionless basketball. And if you want to call Steph Curry a point guard, you can, but I don't really think he's a traditional point guard in the sense of back in the 90s and the 80s, you had guys like Steve Nash, John Stockton, Jason Kidd, who would legitimately average 9 to 10 assists on the nightly because they would be the system, they would be the entire offense. I don't think those point guards exist anymore. These days, you want your team to have at least three guys who can essentially be quote-unquote point guards, who can facilitate, play make. And if you look at the Golden State Warriors, at any one time, they actually have four guys. Maybe five, because sometimes their center is essentially a passing big man as well. So I think that's where the NBA is moving. I honestly don't get too caught up in whether D'Angelo is a point guard, whether he's a shooting guard. If I had to peg it down, I would call D'Angelo a scoring guard who can pass. Because scoring comes easily to him, it comes most naturally to him, and I don't think that says anything bad about him. You know, I think people get caught up when they hear, oh wait, but if you're not calling D'Angelo a point guard, you're dissing him. And I don't think that's the case whatsoever if we don't call him a point guard. Right now he's going to play the one because he is going to play the one, and Jordan Clarkson is clearly not a point guard in comparison to him. But if someone else comes along with the same passing abilities as D'Angelo who can't score as well as D'Angelo, I would not be surprised if they move D'Angelo to the shooting guard spot. And doing so does not demote him in any way or say anything about his lack of skill. In fact, it may actually say more about his versatility than anything else. And then on top of that, I feel like people kind of get mad and angry when they hear other people say D'Angelo's not really a point guard in the sense that he's not a Chris Paul type, he's not a Rajon Rondo, he's not a Steve Nash, John Stockton type who averages 10 assists. And I'd actually say that's totally okay, because if you look at today's NBA, the guys who do dominate the ball and dominate the assist category actually don't fare very well, and they never have historically even fared very well. So just this past year, we've got Rajon Rondo on top, with 11.7 assists per game. We got Russell Westbrook with 10.4 assists. Then we got John Wall with 10.2 assists, Chris Paul with 10 assists, and then Ricky Rubio with 8.6 assists. Out of that five, Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook were the only two point guards who made the playoffs, and one of those point guards made his superstar teammate leave. And that's Russell Westbrook. But look at the other guys. Rajon Rondo, just a, you know, stat stuffer in terms of piling assists, but he doesn't actually help his team win anymore. And in fact, because he dominates an offense, it's sometimes sometimes detrimental. John Wall, you know, he made the playoffs last year, but this year, averaging 10.2 assists, they missed the playoffs. And then obviously Ricky Rubio, his team sucks around him, but he's always averaged around 9, 10 assists, but his team has never been that great. If you look at the next few guys, you know, James Harden with 7.5 assists, Draymond Green with 7.4 assists, Damian Lillard with 6.8, and LeBron with 6.8, Steph Curry rounds it out at 10 with 6.7 assists. That's where the league is going. More guys who average 5 to 6 assists, and there's no more 8 to 12 assist guys because those guys don't really win anymore. So my point is, it doesn't matter if D'Angelo never becomes that traditional Chris Paul type point guard, because that type of point guard has never really succeeded at the very end to even win a finals MVP. Those guys never seem to make it to the end, because I think by the time you get to the playoffs, that type of style is easier to defend because you know it's going to be in that guy's ball. The point guard is going to be dictating everything. Where today you just want to have 3-4 point guards and keep the defense on edge. So I'll throw it to Tommy and Alan and ask you guys, yeah, what do you guys see out of D'Angelo? Do you see him as a point guard, a shooting guard? Does it matter that he's not a traditional point guard? And are you okay with him maybe shifting to the shooting guard in the future?
No, I see him as like a scoring point guard. I mean, I think that people get so obsessed with this like John Stockton idea. John Stockton like is a myth in today's NBA. Like, I agree. It's like the guys who, with what you said, the guys like Rondo or whoever, Chris Paul, who are like blowing up stat lines with assists, those guys are doing that because that's just how they play. And they're like not ball hogging, but they're like really pounding that ball. You know what I mean? Like the ball's in their hands almost the entire game. They're not playing off the ball. What they do is hold the ball and distribute it. And
they are the system.
They are the system. And that pure distributor model, I don't think that really works anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you need to have two guards who can, in my opinion, two guards who can do multiple things if you want to win. Mm-hmm. If you have one guard, you can have one guard who's just a shooter or something. But I think if you have one guard who just, I mean, you see it with Rondo, and which is why, despite his like flashy stat lines, he can never get a contract, it seems like, anywhere, because, or a long-term contract, because everybody knows, okay, yeah, great, he puts up these numbers and he gets all these flashy assists, but he also just is like standing there holding the ball, waiting for an assist, you know, or standing there dribbling the ball, trying to create an assist. And he's not really a threat to do anything else. D'Angelo, I mean, what, it's funny how like people jump to like, oh, what about Rondo or you know, Chris Paul or John Stockton? Is he like a traditional point guard? No. What about like Steph Curry or like Damian Lillard? Are those guys like traditional point guards? Like, maybe they get a lot of assists because in their system, like Damian Lillard, maybe he gets a good amount of assists because in his system, he just happens to have the ball a lot. And based on the way his team makeup is. But I would say that Damian Lillard is not a traditional point guard by any means. He's a scoring point guard, and I think that's where the trend is going, and I think D'Angelo really fits that trend. You have to have a point guard who can put pressure on defenses offensively, and that's what D'Angelo does. And so I think he is a point guard. I mean, can he play shooting guard? Yes, absolutely. If we signed Westbrook, which obviously isn't going to happen now, but if we signed Westbrook or whoever, D'Angelo could easily shift to the two, and I think he would do just fine there. And he will get to play the two quite a bit, I think, this season. But I think he's still a very solid starting caliber NBA point guard.
Alan?
I am perfectly fine with D'Angelo being either a two guard who is able to pass or just, you know, some type of combo guard in general. Obviously, everyone's going to think of Steph Curry as that type of player who clearly can bring the ball up the floor. He can distribute it masterfully. But when he wants to score and when he has an opportunity, he's going to do that without any hesitation. Whereas back in the day, a guy like, you know, Jason Kidd, if he took a jump shot at some point, it was almost out of desperation. He didn't start shooting threes well till the very end of his career. It just wasn't a priority in that generation. But it's interesting, like, you know, we talked a little bit about how you don't see ball dominant point guards really winning NBA Finals MVP yeah. or anything like that. But you think about some of the great dynasties, even going back to the 80s, like look at the Showtime Lakers. Okay, yes, obviously Magic was the epitome of a point guard, but you had a guy like Byron Scott who could create his own shot. You had James Worthy who could also get his own shot and create for himself. So that's a pretty versatile team right there, even though they were more of the old school NBA, so mm-hmm. to speak. If you look at the Bulls, granted it's the triangle offense, the point guard never like did anything beyond bringing it up the floor. If we think of Derek Fisher, you think about Ron Harper with us and with the Bulls. It was pretty much bring it up and then pass it and start moving around, whether it was Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen or Tony Kukoc, you know, doing their own thing. So again, yeah, the Utah Jazz, I guess there's an example. Granted, they were always stopped by the Bulls, but when you're John Stockton, you have Karl Malone right there for you, just pick and roll all yeah. day long. You know, that's kind of like the exception to the rule, I guess, where it is going to work out. So the fact that D'Angelo is such a versatile guy doesn't bother me by any stretch. And again, if he ended up being our shooting guard 5 or 7 years from now due to someone else coming in and being just literally the guy labeled as point guard, it wouldn't bother me because you know he's still going to get his assists from time to time, whether exactly. it's in transition or just the fact that he has great vision. It'll come to him. But Luke doesn't need to draw up plays where it's okay, D'Angelo, you're going to pound the ball for 12 seconds. Everybody else, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And then he's going to get you the ball in your spot after one pass. Yeah. Like, clearly, that's not the case. So I got no problem with it. After watching him play for a year, you can tell. I mean, some of this is the system with Byron where no one probably really knew what they were doing. But I think his mindset is, number one, I'm going to put the ball in the basket.
Yeah. I think the problem is people get too caught up in saying that, oh, but if we don't call D'Angelo a point guard, then that means he's not as good as we thought he was, you know, which we need to just stay away from that sort of thinking, you know, because the reality is D'Angelo's passing opens up more when he can do what he does best, which is score, because the guy can score very easily. And I think we found that out in the NBA that he can score in such a myriad of ways. And once that gets going and defenses start dialing in on him, that's when the passing lanes open up and that's when he likes to throw all those passes. But I think scoring just comes much more easily for him. Same way as Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving, you know. The only reason why they play the point guard position is because they're smaller, and those are the guys that they can guard.
Right.
But I think people get too scared and caught up in the fact that, like, oh, no, but you said D'Angelo's not a point guard, so what is he, a shooting guard? So what are we going to do? And I think even if we were to move D'Angelo to the shooting guard spot, I think people just automatically think, okay, so we're going to get a Westbrook type, or like, we're going to get a Chris Paul type point guard, right?
Right.
And I don't even necessarily think that's true. I feel like we just get another ball handler to play the point guard spot.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what it would be. But I think people are too focused on the past and how NBA used to be played that it's like, okay, if we shift the D'Angelo to shooting guard, then he can't do his passing stuff. And it's like, no, that's not true, because I don't think we necessarily get a Ricky Rubio type guy to play the point. It would just be another D'Angelo Russell type player at the point playing with him together. So
yeah, and I think we talked about this before, but like even before we started this podcast, right? Like if we're talking, let's see, D'Angelo's drafted 2015. So if we're talking about like when you and I used to talk in like January 2015, like well before this podcast started, we would say stuff like, I really wish the Lakers would take a hard look at D'Angelo if they end up in the top three, because I think the NBA is trending towards the system where, you know, everybody's into like these combo players and like this, you know, position. By this time, Golden State was like in full swing already and everybody was sort of understanding that. But the NBA is sort of moving towards like positionless basketball, guys who flow seamlessly between positions. And I thought that the Lakers, based on the way that they've done their last two or three drafts or so, are clearly showing indications
that they're moving towards that. And taking D'Angelo was a very, like, it was like a slap in the face. Hey, this is what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, moving towards this, let's have 2 6'5" guards who can both pass, both shoot, both create shots, both, you know, dribble, whatever. Like, they do everything. And having 2 6'5" combo guards, as opposed to having this guy is my shooter and he spots up and shoots threes in the corner, and this guy is my ball handler and he'll break you down off the dribble and drive and kick.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what I said earlier, I feel like people think that if D'Angelo was shifted to the shooting guard spot, that all he would be doing would be Klay Thompson type stuff. Like, he would just shoot, he would just cut, and he would just curl off screens. But as we see in James Harden, that's not what James Harden does. If he has that playmaking vision, he's going to find a way to make that playmaking vision happen, even if he's in a different position. Alan, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think any of us could imagine D'Angelo coming off screen catching, and his prerogative number one is to shoot. Yeah. You know, like, instinctively, he's going to, within a half second, check out what's going on in that moment. If there's another opportunity for a guy, he's going to go there, and then he'll shoot, you know. But if he has a wide-open shot, of course he's going to take it. But I think his mentality, you can't even pin it down to, oh, he's just a natural scorer. He always wants to score. No, that's Kobe Bryant. That's Tracy McGrady. You know, that's what they do. I don't want to, like, make this type of comparison, but you look at a guy like LeBron, who will survey the floor and within a split second decide what the best thing is, whether he should shoot himself or pass it. And I just think that most of these incredibly impactful players like Steph or Damian or whoever all have a similar mindset as that.
Yeah, I think right now, because D'Angelo is so young, he's still feeling his game out. And right now he sees, oh, I'm getting a lot of turnovers because the risky passes I was taking in college don't work as well. But you know what does work and translate? Oh, my scoring. So that's why it seems like that's his go-to move. But once he gets better teammates, a better system, then that should open up the passing. That doesn't necessarily mean I think he's going to be all of a sudden a Chris Paul type point guard who's going to average 8 to 9 assists. I don't think anybody should be expecting that at all. But like I've mentioned earlier, we probably don't even want him to average 8 to 9 assists, because that means he's dominating too many possessions. When we have too many talented guys for one guy to be getting 9 assists, you know what I mean? Now, if we're talking about semantics and saying, okay, between D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson, who's quote-unquote the point guard, based off of who has better playmaking vision?
Yeah, obviously, it's D'Angelo.
Exactly, and we learned that in the span of just this past year when we saw Jordan Clarkson, who started at point guard for pretty much the entire season, not make the right reads. He'd make it when it was obvious, but too often that's a guy who will always look to score and drive to the basket and do those things. He's much more tailored to be the quote-unquote shooting guard. He can pass and play make in certain situations better than most shooting guards, but Jordan Clarkson is definitely the definition of a combo guard. You know, he has some passing ability and he can handle the ball and facilitate for you, but his natural, he just doesn't have the playmaking vision and reading rainbow skills that D'Angelo Russell has and has the potential to have when things are clicking and there's an actual system and coach around him.
Hey, man, just because I spell veins wrong in the summer don't mean I know how to read, all right?
That's all right, Jordan Clarkson. We understand. You're a great player, and we are expecting big things from you. We're just saying that D'Angelo Russell, and I think, Alan, you'd agree.
Yes.
He just makes the proper reads and pick and roll. So Jordan Clarkson sometimes can't even make a simple pick and roll pass, you know, because he's too focused on scoring. And that's why I think if you're just saying between the two, who's the point guard, it's D'Angelo Russell. Now, if 3 years down the line, the Lakers somehow trade for, another D'Angelo Russell type player, let's say it's Kyrie Irving. Guess who's going to play the point guard spot? It's going to be Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie Irving's like 6'2".
Yeah.
And he's going to have to play the point guard spot.
He's not going to be the two. That's exactly. For damn sure.
And D'Angelo Russell is going to have to play the shooting guard spot.
Which is fine, and they can both create. So exactly. Whatever, you know? Whoever's in a better position to create for somebody else is just going to do it. You know, you're not going to get slapped on the wrist by the coach. Like, hey, man, you're the two guard. You're just supposed to shoot jumpers.
Exactly.
You know, I think people think D'Angelo being called anything but a point guard means he's being demoted or that he's less versatile, and that there's a chance that he could be replaced at the point guard spot in the future because we're not calling him a point guard. And that being a combo guard means we are downplaying his court vision and passing ability.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think the reality is it might actually mean the opposite, that he's more versatile because he can do combo guard things at the shooting guard spot. And that if they do bring in another point guard type dude who's a bit smaller, they know that because of D'Angelo's size, because he's like a legit 6'5", and that he has shooting and cutting ability, that they can slide D'Angelo to the two. You know, so like Kyrie Irving, like you mentioned, if Kyrie Irving was 6'6", I guarantee you he would probably be playing shooting guard.
Yeah.
If Damian Lillard was 6'6", he would play shooting guard. All of our years with Kobe Bryant and Derek Fisher, Kobe was effectively the point guard,
yeah.
But he never guarded point guards because Fisher was smaller than him. And so Fisher effectively played point guard, but Kobe was still the shooting guard, but he dictated and orchestrated the offense. And same goes for Harden. Harden is the point guard of the Houston Rockets team, but he's a shooting guard because he's taller than Patrick Beverley. And on the defensive end, he's going to be guarding the shooting guard. You know, I think people need to realize that sometimes positions are dictated by who you're guarding on the defensive end as well as in accordance to your height. So I feel like if some Patrick Beverley or Avery Bradley type player came on the Lakers, that they would shift D'Angelo to the two spot because those guys would play point guard and defend the other team's point guard. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know if you had anything else to add about
that. No, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I just don't see, okay, like, what big deal? They call him a shooting guard. Okay, go move on with your life. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing point guard, whether you like it or not, and he gives us so many advantages by playing the point guard because he is so much bigger than everyone he's going to be playing against. That I frankly don't care if people say, oh, well, is he actually a traditional point guard? Steph Curry is like the 2-time MVP and he's not a traditional point guard. So who cares?
Yeah, so I mean, there were definitely times when I can recall D'Angelo making a backdoor cut along the baseline. And whether it was Kobe or Clarkson passing to him, he'd get deep in the paint. He's 6'5". He could finish with like a reverse layup around those bigs. You know, I cannot imagine Chris Paul doing that because he'd get his shot blocked.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way he's going to be roaming around the paint shooting reverse layups off the wrong foot, period. So I think it's actually more of a compliment than anything else that D'Angelo has the versatility to come off screens and to dive in the paint as a result of his height and his length. Again, why wouldn't you want someone who has more tools to offer, who has innate skills that are just there, as opposed to, oh, I want someone who is 6'1" and weighs 175 or 180 pounds, who has great ball handling skills and can pass the rock. So, okay, well, that's all great, but if in this day and age, if he can't do anything else very well, unfortunately his ceiling is capped.
Yeah, I think the ambiguity of it all kind of scares people. It's almost like that thing with tweeners from, like, the shooting small forward, power forward. People get so caught up in, like, well, what is he? What can he do? Can he shoot or can he protect the rim? It's kind of the same thing. But in this case, it's like the ambiguity actually helps D'Angelo Russell because he has all of these skills. Whereas in Clarkson, there's less ambiguity. You're like, no, that guy's a shooting guard, you know? He can pass it, but he's a shooting guard. D'Angelo, because he does a lot of things very well, like it said, it lends itself to showcasing his versatility. And we just need to throw away the notion that if somebody says he's not a point guard, that's not a diss, you know.
I can also imagine some people right now thinking, oh, so what are you trying to say, that John Stockton's not as good as D'Angelo Russell, or this particular ball dominant point guard back from the 80s isn't as good as D'Angelo? It's like, no, if those guys are playing in today's NBA, they would adopt different skills, period.
Right.
I'm not saying a guy like John Stockton, who is arguably 6'1", would not succeed in today's NBA. He probably, from an earlier age, would have just learned how to be a more prolific scorer. Because we all know John Stockton can shoot. I'm sure he would have had some sort of floater, etc. So this is not to take anything away from some of the, you know, Hall of Fame point guards who were your classic point guard, mm-hmm. so to speak. Again, Steve Nash was kind of caught up in the middle of both generations.
Yeah.
And as he progressed in his career, he became more of a scorer.
Right.
You know, without a doubt, he would look for that floater. He would let guys ride on his hip, shoot a mid-range jumper, and things like that. So if, again, these guys were right in the midst of today's NBA, they would probably pretty much adopt this style. So
yes.
Just disclaimer, we're not trying to take anything away from
Let's also focus on, you know, Chris Paul. Because right now, yeah. Chris Paul is the prime example, cream of the crop point guard, right? He averages 10 points, you know, averages 19 points, 10 assists. He can score and he can pass. But like I said, Chris Paul is almost like in a Russell Westbrook situation where he is the system. With Luke Walton's team, I don't think you necessarily want the point guard to have the ball 80% of the time and for 20 seconds of the shot clock. You know, he wants the ball to be whizzing past everybody, moving around, everybody's moving, passing the ball. There's, you know, it can't stick to one guy. And Chris Paul, as great as he is, he still has never made it to the Western Conference Finals, I believe, right? It's hard for him. And I've actually heard some complaints from people saying that the Clippers offense is too predictable because it's just in Chris Paul's hands. And he gets his stats very effectively and efficiently, but at the same time, it's like you almost wish he had teammates who could also play make with him and that it wasn't so predictable. So if we're talking about, do I think D'Angelo Russell can be a Chris Paul type guy? No. One, I don't think he has the same playmaking ability as Chris Paul, and he doesn't make the same leader, like floor reading ability as Chris Paul. But at the same time, like I said, I don't necessarily think I want him to be Chris Paul for the reasons I just stated. Because
he has so many other strengths, he should utilize those.
Yeah. So can he do the Chris Paul thing where he has that mid-range jump shot game? Yes, we've seen it, you know? Yeah. In that sense, we've seen it. But because right now his playmaking is a little behind his scoring, I don't think he can be a Chris Paul type. But that's okay because, like I said, we probably don't want him to be a Chris Paul type. And he'll probably cap off at a 5-6 assist type guy. And that is not a bad thing.
Okay, let's say that we want him to be like a traditional point guard, which, like we said again, is not the way the NBA is going. But let's say we want to fit him into that Chris Paul mold. Do you even think right now that he has the decision-making on-court floor leadership to be a Steve Nash, Chris Paul type facilitator for a whole game? Because in my opinion, I think he still needs help managing a game for himself. And we've seen that last year when he got all the time. And when he, especially in summer league this year, right? When Jesse Mermoise even pointed it out and said, you know, D'Angelo is great. Like he can, I'm actually trying not to get into the voice, but it's creeping up in there. You know, but he's saying that, you know, it's great that he can score, he can do all those things, but it seems like right now he needs help in terms of figuring out when to do that and learning how to just be a good floor leader throughout the whole game, which is what you'd expect out of a traditional point guard like Steve Nash. You know, Steve Nash, he knew exactly what he wanted to do every time he came down the court. D'Angelo right now, because I feel like it's not the same with D'Angelo because he's always looking to score. He has tremendous court vision, but right now I think it comes in spurts. Does that make sense?
No, I 100% agree that it comes in spurts. And that's the weird thing about him, because at times you watch this guy play and you're like, holy crap, this guy's like John Wall or something. You know, like he's creating for everybody. He sees everything. It's like it in flashes. His court awareness goes up like exponentially. It's so weird. But then other times you'll see him misreads, you know, like constantly fail to recognize mismatches, constantly fail to recognize what's happening on the court, constantly fail to recognize, you know, when to attack versus when to do his little like old man game thing. That kind of stuff, you're just hoping that coaching helps, right? Because again, he was a young freshman for his class, and he only played 1 year in college, and then he came in with Byron, who like basically didn't do crap for his development. So you're really, really hoping that Luke has some like knowledge to bestow on him, because if he gets like 10, 15, 20% better, he doesn't have to like become a different player. He's already not that bad at that kind of stuff. But if he just gets a bit better at that stuff, it's going to be so dangerous. And I think that's all a process. You know, we've never had a young point guard who we've brought up, you know, in our team. I mean, the closest thing in our lifetimes, Fisher, I'm not going to really count because he wasn't like a creator like we talked about. In our lifetimes, Farmar, you know, like, and he was on the team for what, six or seven years. So Farmar, we saw like his first few years,
he was like a small scoring guard, basically. And it took him many years. And even honestly, by the very end, Farmar's obviously not nearly as good as D'Angelo or not nearly as talented, but it wasn't until like really the very end where I started to feel comfortable that this guy like actually knew how to make decisions and wasn't just like mindlessly sprinting and throwing up shots. Point guard, we've never had to deal with like seeing how these guys develop, seeing how these guys, you know, learn the game, seeing the pace with which they learn the game. And there hasn't really been a point guard who was like a pure distributing point guard who just came in and dominated from like the very beginning since, I don't know, Chris Paul. Like John Wall struggled a lot when he was a rookie. Can you think of any others? Like,
well, I mean, like even Derrick Rose, more of a scoring point guard too.
So the guys who are scoring point guards, I think, have a much easier adjustment. And I think that's what you'll see this season now that D'Angelo has a real coach. Even Pincus, who is like the biggest skeptic of all time, was like pumping this up as, I think D'Angelo is going to have a huge year.
Right.
So I think you're going to see that. But in terms of the decision making, that's going to be like a much longer process. Like expect to see D'Angelo stat wise and optically, like to like a superficial fan, look a lot better, which is good. You know, that has value in it in and of itself because it creates buzz around the league. But in terms of decision making, I think that is, if he can by the end of the year show signs that he's making strides in that area, I'm going to be pretty impressed, because that's going to be like a couple more years thing until he's like, you know, 22, 23. He's been in the league for like several years at that point, and he is just like so much more in control that he doesn't make those stupid mistakes anymore.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite there at this point. If I had to be a little bit more exact, I would say he's like 65-70% of the way to a Steve Nash or a Chris Paul. And obviously those are some of the all-time greats. So him after 1 year to be where he is, I think is fine. Totally agree with Tommy where he does miss a lot of opportunities that, yeah, spectators are watching the team. They're like, dude, like get it down low to so-and-so. He's got a mismatch and he's just trying to dribbling the ball to death. And then he sees it too late. Defense, you know, steps in front. Throws a, you know, he makes a turnover, whatever it is. But again, with time, I have so much faith in this coaching staff that they are going to walk him through so many scenarios in a way that helps him feel comfortable with making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, with Byron, I mean, we're not there in practice, but one can assume he treated it more like a drill sergeant scenario. Mm-hmm. Where he screws up and it's like, all right, man, you got to go run suicides, do all these push-ups, etc. And that's just not a healthy learning environment. You know, this isn't football. I don't know if you guys are watching Hard Knocks on HBO, but that's what made me think of is that's the epitome of old school.
Yeah.
And it fits in that culture. Basketball, I'm sorry, it's just different, especially today. So when it comes to his maturation as a point guard with this coaching staff, I have a lot of faith in it. And it's funny that we say that because how many people have said in the past, oh, well, Byron had Chris Paul and Byron had Jason Kidd. Look at those point guards. They're some of the best ever. Man, D'Angelo's going to develop so well under that coaching staff. But there's clearly just a generational disconnect.
Right.
You know, however you want to chop that up. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And he seems like the type that will want to study with the coaches a lot, like whether it's on plane rides or whatever it is. You see him, you know, talking to Jesse Mermes on the bench. You see him talking with Brian Shaw a lot. He seems, as he said, he's hungry and he wants to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's all there.
He's been gushing about the coaching staff lately on Twitter, on social media. He's just like, I'm so excited about this entire coaching staff. It's amazing. You know, and that's really encouraging to see. And, you know, to be fair, like we said, we really haven't seen the full extent of whether or not D'Angelo can be that Chris Paul type point guard if they allowed him to be, because the system didn't allow him to do that. So this year will really be the real test case to see, okay, if D'Angelo, with a system and better players and the coaching staff telling him to make better decisions and actually giving him set plays, can he properly run those plays, run those sets as the lead guard? And can he cut down on his flashy passes and turnovers and knowing when to make that decision of, you know what, this is too risky of a pass, I'm not going to do that. That's another thing that he gets in trouble with outside of just missing simple reads. Sometimes he just throws some, you're like, are you even playing basketball right now? Or were you just trying to be stupid or something like that? You know, he kind of has moments of airiness.
Like, oh, it's NBA 2K. Let's see if I can squeeze this one in.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? You know, so I'm hoping that the coaches will tell him, like, hey, we don't need that. You have to learn how to value the possession each time. And I think that's what's going to happen with Luke and Mermes and Bushler, all these guys who are here, Shaw, to help him succeed. So at the end of the day, who knows? I don't know. D'Angelo could still go out there and average 8 assists, and you know that wouldn't surprise me because the system might allow him to do that, and he might be able to make better reads. He might see the floor better.
Yeah, if everyone's in a great position based on the system we're running and guys can just knock down shots, then of course the assists are going to come. Last year, no one was in a position where they had wide open shots.
Yeah.
So naturally, everything is a contested shot, much lower percentage. Who's going to have high assists at that rate?
Yeah. So based off of what we've seen from him in college, from his first season in the NBA, based solely off of that, then yes, right now D'Angelo is a scoring guard who has great passing vision and can pass here and there. But like we said, given the new era, the new regime, the new system, the new coaching staff, could he develop into a Chris Paul type? Maybe, you know. He could develop into like an 8-assist guy just right now because of the context we've seen him in.
He's a lethal scorer, and that's kind of what he does and what he's focused on. And once in a while, when he sees like a crease, he'll throw that crazy bounce pass and it'll look amazing, right? But too often, he throws that bounce pass when there isn't a crease, and it's like a really bad turnover. You know what I mean? Yep. Usually the best point guards you can think of, Steve Nash, John Stockton, look, they had a ton of turnovers too, but for most of the game, you felt pretty comfortable with the ball in their hands and their ability to make the right decisions. And when they do have turnovers, you clearly see that that was the right play to make. It just, you know, there was something off. We'll see what Luke has to do, what Luke can do with D'Angelo. And because we've never seen the development of a point guard, really. It's a new process for all of us. But I don't think people should get caught up or too hung up in the labeling or naming of positions or things like that and pigeonholing a guy into a certain template. Because as we're seeing, I think the NBA is just breaking apart those templates and those molds by the year, it seems like. And pretty soon, everybody at every position is going to have to be able to do everything, pretty much. And you're just going to be at a certain position because of your height. And who knows, maybe not even that. So
yeah.
Anything else to add on, D'Angelo?
No, I'm excited about this season. I just wanted to start.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's where we stand, and I think it's really just as simple as that. Just don't get caught up in the semantics of it all and the positions, because the NBA is not getting caught up in that at all.
I realized that when I was born, my arm would tingle. It'll just tingle all the time. And I asked my mom what it was, so I got an x-ray, and it was just ice there. But I don't know.
All right, so I am proud to debut our newest segment, the Telegraph Pass. So thank you guys for sending us in your mailbag questions. This is essentially a mailbag segment. Once again, you can email us or tweet us at Lakers Legacy Pod, or email us at thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com to throw out any topics or discussions or questions you want us to cover here. So our first question comes from AJ at Purple N Gold King. That's purple, the letter N, and then Gold King. He asks, how did you guys become a Lakers fan, and what was your earliest memory becoming a Lakers fan? Alan?
So, I was in the first grade, and it was recess. I was playing basketball, and there was this girl I liked, as a first grader. shout out to Lynette Yamamoto.
talk to me, baby.
Now, Lynette was a baller. She played in like those Japanese leagues and all that stuff, so she's pretty hardcore. And I remember playing basketball with her, trying to like impress her. Honestly, man, she was better than me. She was like, you need to learn how to box out better for these rebounds. And as a 6-year-old, I'm like, what's box out? And she's like, you gotta bend your knees, get down low, get in front of the person for position. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this girl's so good at basketball, and I really like her, and that's pretty cool. So I gotta look, like, root for a team here, you know, I gotta follow basketball. And she told me how her dad would always get Laker tickets mm-hmm. through his work and whatnot. I'm like, oh, Lakers, like, duh, totally makes sense. So I'm like channel surfing, oh, KCAL 9, awesome. So that's why I became a Laker fan. As far as a first memory, I actually went to the first game of the season of the lockout year. Wow. So a family friend had Laker tickets, invited my brother and me, and it was at the Great Western Forum, obviously. And I remember he told us, make sure you guys keep these ticket stubs because it's like a collector's item. It says Game 1, but it's in February. So that's like really weird. And I remember Kurt Rambis was on my ticket, and I'm like, who's this guy that looks like an adult Chucky from the Rugrats? His glasses and his crazy hair and all this stuff.
That is the perfect visual description of Kurt Rambis, adult Chucky.
Yeah, so they're playing the Houston Rockets. Lakers won like 99 to, it was almost double digits. Charles Barkley got kicked out of the game. He got a technical foul in the fourth quarter. He actually took his mouthpiece out and he like threw it across the floor because he was so pissed. And the entire forum was chanting, Barkley sucks, Barkley sucks. Left the game, and there was a guy going pee on the side of the freeway, and my family friend was like, the dad was all, oh, look, that guy's peeing over there. And that's my first Laker memory.
Wow, that's very interesting. I like the Lynette, what is it?
Yamamoto
story. That's a great way to get into basketball, and then you have never let up since.
Exactly.
That's awesome. For me, you know, I told the story before when like only two people were listening, so I guess I'll tell it again now that more people are, that six are. So, you know, back in literally the Lakers' first championship year with Kobe and Shaq, that was 2000 against the Pacers, I just started watching because everybody else was watching. My best friend Andy was watching.
Shout out to Andy!
To Andy Chang. I just started watching the NBA Finals because everyone was doing it. You know, Pacers versus the Lakers. Saw Frobe, and I was like, who is this guy? He's kind of good, but, you know, I've always been one of those, like, hipster, countercultural, against the mainstream kind of kids. So I was like, everybody likes the Lakers, man. I'm going to root for the Pacers. So, actually, my first memory being a Lakers fan was not even being a Lakers fan. I was rooting for the Pacers. I was like, I like this Reggie Miller guy. Austin Crozier is kind of cool. Let's do this. So, you know, the Lakers...
I've never seen someone so pale in the NBA.
I know. So the Lakers ended up winning, of course, and I was like, okay, that's great for LA, but, you know, I kind of wanted the Pacers to win, and that's how that first year went. And then all of a sudden, I had a conversation with my uncle, who lives in Philadelphia. He's actually a huge Celtics fan, but he just randomly started talking... One phone conversation we had on the phone, we started talking about basketball, and he was just like... Man, you know you guys got that Kobe kid? And I was like, yeah, I know Kobe. He's like, I don't like that guy. That guy is, like, such a poser. He's trying way too hard to be Michael Jordan. I don't like him, man. And when he said that for some reason, it made me want to know Kobe Bryant more. I think just the fact that my uncle was so hard on him and that he said that line, he's trying too hard to be like Michael Jordan, intrigued me. So from then on, I was like, huh. Who is this Kobe guy? He plays for the Lakers. I saw him play against Reggie Miller. But just that line, he plays too much, like he tries too hard to be Michael Jordan, kind of spurred me on to see, okay, does he try too hard to be Michael Jordan? Can he be Michael Jordan? And since then, I started following Kobe Bryant, the Lakers, and I was like, well, he kind of plays like Michael Jordan. I feel like he's pretty close, you know? And from then on, you know, I really got into basketball that 2001 season, which was pretty much the Lakers' best season. There was so much drama and entertainment going on in the regular season, and then that was when we went 15-1 in the playoffs. So that was the perfect season to jump full head-on into the Kobe Bryant Lakers era. And since then, I've never let up, and I can say to my uncle, yeah, he's pretty much the closest thing since Michael Jordan. And you kind of spurred that interest on by saying, I don't like this guy. This guy sucks. Go Celtics, you know? And maybe just that Celtics pride from coming from my uncle's side, without even knowing, and I probably already had that purple and gold blood, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if what you're saying is true, and, you know. So that's pretty much how I became a Lakers Kobe fan, and yeah, it's been a great ride ever since, even in the downtime, so there you go. You know, with that said, we're going to cut it there because the show's kind of going long. Thank you guys for listening. Once again, you can follow us on Twitter, at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please rate and review us, because like I said, the more you rate and review us, toe rings, baby. Mozgov toe rings, left middle toe. Let's do this. Hopefully they're all different colors and like glittery and sparkly, so we can see it from the bench and just be like, ah, Mozgov, that's worth $16 million.
Hey, man, we get those toe rings. Me and Nick, we kind of want some of those. Yeah, man, you know, I want one of them toe rings, man. They're going to go real good with my nose ring.
Thank you, Jordan Clarkson and Nick Young. Nick Young, what are you still doing here, man?
I don't know, man. It's all good, you know. What a much love, L.A.
Go to China.
Ni hao.
All right, with that said, that is our show. We'll catch you guys later. Alan?
Laters.
'A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
It's easy. That's what we all want to hear when it's time to work on the car. Like the AutoZone Rewards program. Spending $20 five times earns you $20 towards the next job. Earning savings couldn't be easier. No user manual required or online tutorial needed. And you won't have to call that know-it-all uncle for advice either. Just spend $20 five times and earn a $20 reward. Sign up for free at AutoZone.com/rewards or in store. Let's get you what you need. Get in the zone.